The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
You're listening to KZOM, Oleander Public Radio.
The future is a hefty responsibility and not one that we take lightly. But then taking things lightly has never been what Hefty is about. That's why we've created the Hefty Renew program that turns hard to recycle plastics into valuable resources like park benches and building materials. To participate, simply fill up an orange Hefty Renew bag with accepted items, tie it up, and drop it in with your regular recycling. That's it. It's that easy. It's time to rethink recycling with Renew. Particular valued resources may vary by geography. More info available at heftyrenew.com.
Hey everyone, welcome back to Radio Free Oleander, which this episode is going to be a little bit different. It's going to be a bit like the last Oleander book club, where we didn't talk about Oleander so much, but we did talk about what's going on in the real world, which, Dave, how are you doing?
I am exhausted.
Yeah.
Physically, mentally, emotionally, but at the same point, I am doing much better than I have, you know, any right to expect.
Sure. All right. Yeah, no, I'm up in Portland just, lately just been, like, complaining about the smoke and trying to get the smoke out of the house. And I'm like, oh, yeah, Dave actually was camping outside on a hillside there with a bunch of goats, trying to keep everyone, you know, being part of helping keep everyone safe.
Yeah, so this is kind of our out of character episode, and one thing, you know, and I'm sure DB you've noticed, but you know, maybe people listening, you know, whenever I'm in character, you know, I never say David Heath. It's always Farmer Dave.
Oh yeah,
I'm trying to sort of keep these two personas separate.
Sure.
Farmer Dave is about 2 inches taller, 20 pounds lighter, and about 10 years younger.
Sure.
We keep intersecting.
Okay.
One thing though, that the different sort of the Farmer Dave and the David Heath, the real person, is, and, you know, I came to this conclusion when we were doing the Robert E. Howard Christmas special.
Yeah.
The narrative for the story does not work if Farmer Dave has a support network.
Uh-huh.
And now the story's changed a little bit now that DB has moved into Oleander. And, you know, and Dave's still got it, you know, Pinky, his veterinarian and best friend.
Uh-huh.
But, you know, the big difference sort of between me and the character, or one of the big differences between me and the character Farmer Dave, is I have this rather large support network that he does not.
Yeah.
And in fact, when we were doing the Christmas special, I came up, okay, you know, the Farmer Dave is, he can't have any family. So unlike me, I have a sister and brother-in-law who, you know, I live with. They actually own the goat farm.
Uh-huh.
You know, Farmer Dave is an only child.
Yeah.
And he's an orphan. So I had to go to mom, you know, right before Christmas. Yeah, Mom, I kind of killed you off on the podcast. You know, just because, you know, it says, you know, he had no family. But so the big difference, like I said, one of the big difference character-wise between me and Farmer Dave is I have this huge family that I live with. And so on the property, not only my mom, my sister, my brother-in-law, my niece and nephew, And then my aunt lives just a couple miles away.
Okay.
And so we were affected by the Riverside fire.
Mm-hmm.
And in fact, another thing, you know, Farmer Dave has no children. I actually have two daughters. You know, my daughters texted me and said, hey, you know, there's this, so I'm hearing a lot about fires. Are you safe? And I said, so there was a Eagle Creek fire,
yeah,
which kind of worried me. It was a small fire, but it was close to another farm. In fact, so our friends had to evacuate their horses.
Mm-hmm.
And so I was watching that one. And that fire was actually caused by a guy in an RV who was towing a Jeep. And apparently he didn't have tow chains or something, or drag chains. I'm not sure what that is. And the Jeep caught on fire.
Oh, geez.
And then they pulled over into the heavy grass, and they got grass on fire.
Oh,
and,
man.
And so, but it didn't get that big. I don't know what it was, but it was under 100 acres. It was like maybe 20 acres. And so that's the one I'm watching. I'm saying, you know, so I'm watching this little fire out the front door and this huge, the Riverside, which is, you know, at least last I heard 144,000 acres. And I'm completely ignoring that because I'm worried about this little one because it's technically a little closer, but I knew people that were physically there that had to evacuate.
Okay.
So we have this evacuation plan. The evacuation plan was basically all baby goats that go into my Subaru. That was my part of the evacuation plan. But like so many other things, you know, it looked good on paper. It didn't really manifest into reality.
Uh-huh.
And one of the things, and I get why, because this really did. We also went practically, you know, from nothing to get ready to evacuate now, right away.
Okay.
But there was no, like later on in the fire, there was no like designated incident commander, a person who has been there, knows what's going on, and can relay information. And so we didn't know where to go. And so one of the places that came up that would take livestock was the Canby Fairground.
Okay.
But that would have been cool. We would have to take this huge way around.
Yeah.
Because the fire was in between us and there.
Uh-huh.
And so one of the places that came up, so I live in Estacada, and a good portion of Oleander, it's based on a couple of towns, a town what you went to college and Estacada.
Mm-hmm. Not a town that I went to college in, but a town that I went to a number of years ago that my friends taught at.
Okay. So I knew, so it's sort of a combination.
Yeah, yeah.
So Estacada, the nearest big town being 16,000 people.
Mm-hmm.
And remember, I grew up in a little town in California that had 149,000 people. But so the big town of 16,000 is Sandy, Oregon.
Okay.
And so Sandy, Oregon was designated, looked at everything on the county website as an evacuation center.
Okay.
And so my brother-in-law, who can be a very charming guy,
mm-hmm,
he says, well, I'll just, if we can evacuate there, I'll just unleash the goats and I'll sweet talk them. And we'll just let the goats, you know, eat on the baseball field or the football field. Well, it turns out that this information is like 5 years out of date.
Okay.
That Sandy High School is not an evacuation zone in any way. So he goes to the school and he talks to people on the phone and he finally gets the facility person and he says, no, there's just no way that we can, you know, we can't for legal, whatever. He says, no, I'm sorry, I feel for you, but you can't come on the school ground with your goats.
Huh.
So one of the people that my brother-in-law called was the secretary of the principal of Sandy High School. And she says, okay, well, you know, you can't come to school. Let me make some calls. And a little bit later, he gets this call. So this guy says, hey, I understand you've got goats. You need to evacuate. I've got a horse trailer. I can help you. Mm-hmm. And my brother-in-law says, well, you know, that's great, but we don't have any place to take him. And he says, okay, let me make some calls for you. And remember, these are total strangers.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And he calls back 15 minutes later and says, okay, I got a place that'll take you and your goats. And what it was basic. It's a 10-acre area just off of I-26 and Sandy
mm-hmm.
that it's normally a hay field. But they just harvest all the hay. So it's just all cut down. You know, it's just a little bit of stubble grass. And the total stranger said, it's total, you know, will take us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
So this guy comes in. Not only does he bring a truck and a horse trailer, but like his 20-year-old daughter is following in another truck and a horse trailer.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. And again, these people don't know us.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And so we load them up, and we can get between that and our trailer, we can get all but a few of the goats.
Huh.
And so we get there. And this guy, not only does he let us stay on our property, you know, they provide this flatbed truck with this 500-gallon, you know, water bin so that we can get water to the goats.
Oh, wow.
They provide a porta potty.
Uh-huh.
And you know, completely out of the goodness of their heart. They don't know who. They've never met us. We are now adopting them. These people will forever have never, ever, ever run out of goat cheese or goat milk soup.
Well, that's good to know. That's really good to know.
So my brother-in-law, my sister, they take off and say, okay, we need to get the last of the goats. Leave me with my 16-year-old niece and my, you know, 11-year-old or 12-year-old nephew,
mm-hmm.
who are troopers, who are handling this much better than if I was 16 and my sister was 12. But so we're setting up the last of these electric fences for the bucks, which are, and okay, probably the worst time available for this because the bucks are in heat.
Okay.
So we have to, you know, that means that they're ornery, they want to fight, they want to kind of prove their manlyhood.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
So we get them in this fence, but we don't have power to it. So eventually they push this fence down. Well, my sister and my brother-in-law are gone. And they immediately head off towards our host's garden.
Oh, no.
And I'm freaking out. So you know how you detour a goat?
No.
Same way you do a cat. You know, with you have a cat, you have a spray bottle?
Uh-huh.
So I ended up using their hose. It had this trigger nozzle,
uh-huh.
and so the goats are trying to come up and eat this huge old plant, and I'm like shooting them with a quick draw with a spray hose, and so eventually they decide, well, wait, you know, there's grass over here, and we don't want to get wet, so eventually, between the three of us, we get them all back in their fence.
Oh, nice.
So. The one other, so the next day, and this was misinformation, but because the fire never got into Estacada,
mm-hmm.
it got about almost exactly a mile from our house.
Sure.
But so there's a farm called Sisters Moon.
All right.
Which is almost not exactly on the corner of the road that we live on,
mm-hmm.
and the road that my aunt lives on. And so my brother-in-law is in this text chain with their niece.
All right.
And so we don't know them, but we all know the farm because it's got this huge sign. Everybody sees it. And their niece basically texts and say, you know, their house burned down. We didn't realize they didn't live on the farm.
Hmm.
So they actually lived, you know, a mile or two out from town on the other side of the river. So when we heard that, the information got to us that Sister Moon, the farm, burned down.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And the only way that the fire could have gotten to it was basically if it had gone through either our house or my aunt's house or both.
Okay.
And so that was the point where I really sort of hit rock bottom and says, well, wait a minute. This, I mean, it was always real, but that's when I thought, okay, I always figured we were going to beat this, we were going to get back, you know, just make it through this. And that's when I figured, you know, just, it hit me that there was nothing to go home to.
Yeah.
Fortunately for us, that's not true. You know, my sister and brother-in-law, you know, they've surveyed the property, and it's there. It's safe.
Okay. Well, that's good that you guys are fortunate to not have to deal with fire damage.
Yeah. So, so another thing is, and this is, this fire, the Riverside, it was almost undoubtedly caused by a lightning strike.
Okay.
That's very doubtful. I mean, they've still got to do an investigation, but almost surely, you know, that time we had this quick rain and lightning and the rain disappeared. So almost guaranteed that it was a lightning strike.
Okay.
So the rumor starts going around that it was, I don't know if you heard that Antifa said
it. Oh, yeah, I read about that. That was like something that like the New York Times was reporting, that like people were stopping cars with rifles and, yeah, no.
So I got a couple stories about that.
It's so confusing.
So as near as we could tell, that I mean, besides the general politics and paranoia that exists now, that whole area behind us is Bureau of Land Management property.
Yeah.
So people listening on the radio, they started hearing, yeah, BLM is here. BLM is going up this road. They think it's Black Lives Matter when they're talking about Bureau of Land Management.
Yeah.
And apparently that's where these Antifa stories come from.
Oh, geez.
Now, that's almost crazy enough that it has to be real. I mean, who makes up a story like that?
That is so crazy. Oh, man, that is so weird. I don't get people.
So yes. And for those of, I don't know if we, I mean, we posted a couple things about it, about the Oleander Police Department, you know, which is, I describe as a citizen's watch with samurai swords and AR-15s.
Yeah.
So in a lot of ways, that is based on the SDK to Citizen Watch.
Okay.
And so several of them took post. And so when my sister and brother-in-law went in, there was 3 checkpoints. I mean, they waved my sister and brother-in-law in. Apparently, they looked enough like farmers that they didn't get stopped. But there were a lot of, they were also posting a lot of pictures. And in these pictures, almost every one of them had their finger on the trigger and their muzzle was pointing at another person.
Oh, geez.
You know, my sister said, I was more afraid of getting shot on accident than I ever was at the fire. I mean, their heart's in the right place, I suppose. But if you're gonna take it upon yourself to protect the town, yeah, probably ought to know how to use your gun.
Yeah. Oh no, I'm. I'm sorry. I had firearms training as like safety training as a child. It's like
So
stuff makes you cringe.
I didn't
so
see
bad.
That, but my sister and my sister, you know, she has gone to quite a few safety courses and
sure,
stuff.
Sure.
So. Yeah, I tend to believe what she said.
Yeah.
But the good news is I got today that the town is gone from basically red alert level 3 to yellow level 2, which means get ready to evacuate again, but you can legally enter. And now, it is apparently full of ash, and I'm working the next couple of days, so I'm probably going to stay at least a while with my friend because who's taking him. And so eventually what the people on the land, they were able to clear out a horse barn for us.
Okay.
And so once we've got the goat in the horse barn, they don't have to be watched 24/7.
Sure.
It's when they were afraid of breaking loose. I mean, they've got these very secure, basically pens and areas. So they're not going to break loose. All right. My sister and my brother-in-law, they only have to watch them, milk them, feed them, watch them 2, 3, 4 times a day. And once we got to that position, I was able to, like I said, I had a friend who offered they brought us breakfast on Sunday, but they offered me to let me stay here so I could work. I'm telecommuting anyways, and so I'm really grateful for them. But once it got to the position where the goat, and I've been telling everybody on the internet that there's 68.
Mm-hmm.
My niece, who apparently is better at math than I am, is saying it's 76. And one of the reasons why is when my sister and brother-in-law went back for our last goats, they got a message that one of the people that owns goats, and ours are Nubians, but these are mini Alpines.
Okay.
They were cow camping. And their mother had to evacuate their grandmother who had Alzheimer's.
Okay.
So it was an emergency evacuation. They had a total of like 6 people and, half a dozen dogs and cats.
Huh.
They could not evacuate the goats.
Yeah.
So my sister and brother-in-law evacuated them for them.
Oh, wow.
So we picked up 4 extra little goats. And that's the closest that any of us got to the flames.
Wow.
My sister says that she could feel the heat on her back.
That's
she said
crazy.
She couldn't see the flames, but she could feel them.
Yeah. Weird. That stuff's scary.
Yeah. And this may be the new normal.
Yeah.
My brother-in-law saying, one of the things that's hopefully coming out of this is we're going to work more with the other farms and have a more planned evacuation for all of the people, have livestock in that area.
Interesting.
So one last story.
Yeah.
So our hosts, like I said, wonderful people, because they didn't know us. They just took us in because they're good people. Well, where do you live in Estacada? And my first thought was, where Lynx Hill is? And then I realized, wait a minute, Lynx Hill isn't in Estacada, it's in Oleander. I'm giving them wrong directions. I'm giving them directions for a city that doesn't exist.
Oh, wow. Yeah, no, and oh, man, I was like, when... the other day when we were recording, it was like, there was just like, I think just up on Mount Hood is where things were, and it hadn't really gotten that far. And I hadn't thought about the fact that we have a podcast that's existing in a place that could possibly be part of a natural disaster.
Exactly. And that's one of the things that I am, and especially I think we kind of, to make Oleander steam real, we picked Clackamas County.
Yeah, yeah.
And it just so happened that every part of Clackamas County came under some type of evacuation.
Sure, yeah, yeah.
And I told you one last story, but the one thing that the county and the firefighters, bless them all. They are incredible people. They are real superheroes.
Mm-hmm.
But they had to make some decisions. And they, I think, were caught off guard by the scope of this fire.
Yeah.
And so areas like I was living in, went from nothing to level 2 alert, skipping level 1. They weren't expecting something like this. And I get this. But they didn't want to get caught off guard again.
Mm-hmm.
So they started moving the alert, including the areas that we were.
Uh-huh.
And so we were down to 1 trailer. And we were basically going, as we were watching, they started putting in an alert for Sandy. And so we would have to evacuate to either the Washington County Fairgrounds or Canby. And Canby got moved because you can't have an evacuation center in a level 2 alert area.
So people who are listening who don't live in Oregon, what are the distances between these places?
So about an hour drive.
Okay. All right. And that's when there's not smoke everywhere and roads aren't closed and you aren't being detoured because everyone isn't trying to evacuate. And so, okay.
Exactly. And so the roads and Sandy were clogged.
Okay.
It took my sister and brother-in-law an hour to go to the Fred Meyers that was like 2 miles down the road to get back.
All right.
Because the roads were just clogged. So the plan was, okay, if we got to leave, we will have to do it at night, and we're going to have to make 4 trips because we don't have those other trailers yet.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And, you know, and they're taking care of their own horses now, and, you know, rightfully so. So we were going to have to basically make 4 trips, and we were planning it basically the entire night moving goats.
Uh-huh.
But it never got that far. And so our hosts went and they talked to several of the people in the fire department, and they talked to some of the police, and they said, you know, I think you're going to be safe here.
Yeah.
And basically they said, you know, we know this area. If you see us, go. And so it was a little bit of a risk, but I think it was the right decision in hindsight that we didn't try to do a second evacuation.
Yeah.
But we came close to doing that twice.
Oh, wow.
And like I said, in just the logistics, the dangers on the road, the fire. And so during this time, my aunt also owns a condo in Sandy.
Mm-hmm.
And so my mom evacuates with her to this little one-person condo with 6 cats and 2 dogs. And so they take off when Sandy goes to level yellow,
mm-hmm.
Which is that second. And because we think we're going to be going to the Washington Fairgrounds, they go to Washington County Fairgrounds. There are no hotels. There is no place that they can stay.
Sure.
So they end up coming back. Now, I'm sure that there would have been room for us or them on the fairgrounds, but, you know, with hindsight, we made the right call not to evacuate the second time,
mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
But there was a little worry.
Yeah, yeah. Huh.
So how was your week? How was your week, listeners?
Yeah. Hey, everyone.
And you know what the terrible thing is?
What's that?
We're no longer the worst environmental disaster in the news right now.
No.
The Gulf Coast has got hit by a hurricane.
Yeah, no, I saw that.
2020 has just been unbelievable.
Yeah, no, I saw the news the other day about, like, just kind of like global weather, like what's going on off the Gulf Coast and what's going on in just the water. It's pretty intimidating looking.
you know, I'm back. Like I said, I'm at my friend Jamie and his wife house, and I work. And, you know, so somebody hadn't sent us an invoice so we could pay him for work, you know, for like 3 weeks. And I called him up, and I didn't even look where. And it was in Alabama. And I said, hey, we want to give you your money. He says, well, you know, we'll deal with this tomorrow when the hurricane's gone. And I go, oh, yeah, I didn't look where you guys were. Okay. but we're still trying to give you your money.
Yeah. Ah, yeah, no.
Yeah, it's just, I've never had anything like this in my life.
Yeah.
Not at this level.
Yeah, no, the closest thing I can come to this is, like, Mount St. Helens erupting when I was, like, 5.
Sure.
And that was just, like, dust and clouds for weeks on, or, you know, for weeks on end. And I'm like, just thinking about like how awful that was. And it's just like, you couldn't see anything anywhere forever. And you couldn't drive for such a long time. And, and we all had to wear not gas masks, but like little cotton masks. And I was like, you know, this really reminds me of when I was a kid when the mountain blew up. Because that's what everyone, like, I remember everyone in Portland was like, when the mountain, or, you know, the mountain blew up, Mount St. Helens just blew up. And there was this cloud you could see for
absolutely. People, I mean, I was in California when it happened, but sure. That's what I heard. Although watching this clouds and just this little line, this ash coming in, you know what it reminded me of? Is that scene in War of the Worlds in the book when the Martians released the black gas on London? That's what it felt like.
Crazy.
Yeah.
Yeah. So,
but like I said, we did not lose a goat.
Yeah.
And everybody made it out. And knock on wood, our house is there.
Good, good, good. That's so glad to hear. I'm so glad to hear that. It's really, really good to hear that. But yeah, so we're scheduled. I have a part that I recorded the other day with a botanist and friend, Heather Anderson, which we're going to listen to now. And then after that, in a little bit, Dave and I are going to talk about plants in Dungeons and Dragons, how to use plants in Dungeons and Dragons and ideas for that, which we didn't really rehearse that. We haven't really talked about this, so we're just going to do it kind of off the cuff, but, you know, kind of like we always do. So.
that's about normal.
So, yeah, we'll after that and after the break, we will talk to you about that. So we'll see you in a minute.
Hey, everyone. Here we are back again with another episode of DB Talks to an Expert. I am talking with botanist. I don't know what. How do you describe your Heather?
I'm a Renaissance woman.
Yeah, no, definitely, definitely. You have such a wide, varied background and so many fingers and so many pies. Kind of, I don't know, pokers and fires. I don't know which analogy to use or metaphor.
They're all good. I'm a botanist and author. Culinary historian. Name it. I probably have rabbit holes on it at least once.
Animal husbandry.
I am husbanding animals. Quite a few.
I needed to talk to you about carnivorous plants and everything that I can find out about them, where they're from, where you can find them, and how to make them flourish, and if they get out of control, how to get rid of them.
Well, where to begin? So, yeah, carnivorous plants exist in the wild, in nature, in many parts of the world, temperate and tropical. I would say the one, like, hard and fast rule about where they grow is in areas that are moist. And I know it's a foul word, but with high soil saturation.
Sure.
Or in tropical areas where they will receive some kind of rainfall every single day. So like the tropical pitcher plants, those ones that are more epiphytic. And then the other universal truth about carnivorous plants is that they grow in areas with soils that are nutrient poor.
Okay.
And so that's why they evolved the ability to absorb nutrients through their modified leaves, these leaves that they evolved to be like traps to collect insects. And so they can collect these little insects and then digest them either with little enzymes that are on the sticky dew trap, as in sundews, or in the liquid that's inside of a pitcher type trap. Even Venus flytraps, when they close their little traps, they are secreting these digestive enzymes that helps break down and collect the nitrogen.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah.
So, you said pitcher plants, Venus flytraps, is there...
Yeah, there are sundews. There's another group called the butterworts, which are really pretty. They are kind of sticky trap like sundews, but their sticky parts are like more, look like almost like rubber. They're really soft looking. And then there's these really cool ones that only live in ponds and lakes called bladderworts. And they actually have this like little trap door that like sucks insects in. They're pretty cool.
That sounds like something out of Skyrim. Like
yeah, you could totally.
Like get a bunch of bladder warts and trade it for an animal hide or something.
Oh yeah, totally. Probably worth or claws or something.
Yeah, no. So if I wanted to have like any of these, would it be possible to have these as like, I don't know, plants in your house or pets or whatnot?
Absolutely. Well, some of the pitcher plants and cobra lilies, which are my favorite because those are native to the Oregon, Southern Oregon and the Oregon coast. Those and a lot of pitcher plants and Venus flytraps are native to areas that are more temperate. So the Venus flytrap, which looks like the most exotic jungle live-in plant, it's actually just from like North Carolina. That's where it's native.
You're kidding.
No. So, I mean, a lot of these can handle, I keep my pitcher plants outdoors all year round and they, you know, sort of go dormant in the winter and then in the spring they come back and they bloom in the summer. And right now they're putting out all these beautiful new traps. And yeah, they just are flourishing. I keep my sundews indoors mostly because I grow those to trap like fungus gnats and fruit flies and like smaller pesky insects that live in the house. So yeah, those ones I keep indoors. I have this like big bowl filled with water. It's got a little bit of gravel on the bottom. And then I just set each of these little potted carnivorous plants in the big bowl so that they are always staying moist.
Oh, cool.
Yeah, and they do pretty well. I've got a couple of tropical pitchers too. And they all just need to stay really, really moist, saturated. So yeah, there's a really, whatever your growing conditions are, there's probably a carnivorous plant that you can grow. Sometimes if you live like in a windowless basement, you would need to have some windows or some lights put on, but otherwise they're pretty easy to take care of. You don't have to fertilize them. You just have to keep them watered. And you know, usually when you buy them, they're already in the right growing medium, which is just sand and peat moss. So they don't even need anything really fancy there. Just, in fact, right now I'm looking at, I have these little sticky sundews in this tiny little glass terrarium with ferns and moss in it. And yeah, I just kind of water it once a month really well and keep the lid on it. And it stays really just healthy and happy.
Cool. Well, that's pretty cool. Something I do know about you is you are, I don't know, I would say a video game, someone who plays video, I don't want to say gamer, I don't like
gamer. Just pretty gross.
Use that term gamer, yeah. But like myself, you like to play video games as well as a billion other things to do. Do you have any favorite carnivorous plants from video games?
Oh my gosh. Well, I have to say the Deku Baba from Legend of Zelda, Ocarina of Time, and, you know, and beyond is definitely top three. Piranha Plant, number two.
Sure.
I'd say. I think that pretty much every carnivorous or predatory plant in Legend of Zelda's series is really, that franchise has done a really nice job of making plants scary. I didn't play any like Plants versus Zombies. I don't think there are any evil plants in Stardew Valley. Yeah, no, those are, I guess those are my top two, the Piranha Plant and the Deku Baba.
Cool, cool.
What about you?
Yes. I was trying to think of anything other than Piranha Plant. Uh-huh. I've never played enough Legend of Zelda, unfortunately, and I was like, what other games do I play that there's like deadly plants? And I'm like, more like tree people in that.
The Deku Babas are pretty clearly influenced by the Piranha Plants. I mean, they're both like that kind of feed me, see more, like, know, chompy head on a stem and with teeth. I don't know. I guess maybe in Japan they might not have as many options for, like, carnivorous plant inspiration.
Sure. I don't know. All right. Well, that was Heather Anderson, everyone. And thank you, Heather, for coming on the show and talking about carnivorous plants. That was really cool to find out that stuff.
Sure. Yeah, anytime.
Yeah. And did you have anything? What books do you have out there? You mentioned that you're an author. What books do you currently have?
My books are about culinary history, but I mean, they're also kind of about plants. My books are Breakfast, a History. The second one is Portland, a Food Biography, which is a culinary history of Portland, Oregon. And the third book is Chili's, a Global History. It's a nice little short single subject book about the global spread of chili peppers. And the fourth book is Berries, a Global History, which is part of the same series, the edible series, that Reaction Books publishes. And so it's another little single subject book. And I think your readers would be interested to know that each of my books has a dick joke hidden therein. So yeah, I got to collect them all.
Okay, thank you so much, Heather. And maybe we'll have you on sometime for something else. I don't know, maybe dick jokes.
Sounds great, yeah.
Arm wrestling or dick jokes?
Yeah, why not both? Stunt dog gif.
All right.
All right, see ya.
And then a bit. Hey, everyone, welcome back. I hope you enjoyed that part on carnivorous plants. And yeah, I keep thinking about it in video games, and I can really just think of piranha plants myself, honestly. But I don't.
I'm not a big video game
gamer,
but I know Plant versus Zombies.
Plant versus Zombies. Yeah, that's something that we mentioned that neither of us really knew about, and didn't know if there was carnivorous plants in that, but we knew that there was plants.
I think there's zombie. There's actually Plant versus Zombie comic books.
Oh, okay. I just knew it was a mobile game. I didn't know if there was anything else to it.
Yeah, so it's a game, and then it branched out to comic books.
Aha, gotcha.
And there's the guy saying that the plants are going to save us from the zombies or something is Crazy Dave. and he has this beard and he has these overalls. But instead of wearing a farmer hat, he has like a tin pot on his head.
Gotcha. All right.
That's what I know. That's what I know about video games and plants.
Okay.
So a little bit more on role playing games and plants.
Okay. So let's talk about. I don't know, plants and role-playing games. Like, the one that pops into my brain right away is Memory Moss. Memory Moss from, like, I think, first edition Dungeons & Dragons. And I'm
drawing a blank on that one, I have to admit.
Yeah, same here, because it's Memory Moss. I think it's...
Gamma World.
Yeah?
Gamma World and Goodwin Games did it. Basically a version of that Mutant Crawl Classics, where that's one of the choices. You could be a plant mutant.
Oh, wow. Okay.
You could be Memory Moss?
Yeah, Memory... Oh, I'm trying to get past all of the pop-ups that just came for this dumb thing.
So with Gamma World, you could be a pure strain, a normal human being, a human mutant, an animal mutant, or a plant mutant. And I mean, I write in a couple plant mutant NPCs, but I don't remember anyone ever playing a plant mutant.
Huh. Yeah, no. That totally sounds like Gamma World. Memory moss appears to be a 5-foot square patch of black moss that grows in temperate or warm climates and sometimes encountered in suburban realms. Memory moss cannot abide the cold or the arid climate of the desert and is never encountered in such environments. When a living creature comes within 60 feet of a path of memory moss, the moss attacks by attempting to steal that creature's memories. It can target a single creature each round. The targeted creature must succeed a DC 14 wisdom save throw or lose all memory from the last 24 hours. This is particularly nasty for to spellcasters who lose all prepared spells within the last 24 hours.
Yeah.
So that's Memory Moss. That was the one. I was like, Memory Moss. It's the... It doesn't, like, eat you, but it, like, zaps your brain. I was like, does it eat your wisdom? Brain. Yeah. I was, like, trying to remember if it, like, I didn't want to say, oh, yeah, it totally takes your wisdom and intelligence, but that'd be a nasty plant, too.
And I can't remember if it was D&D or another game, but there were these zombies that was controlled by a plant growing inside the body.
Oh, yeah.
And I'm not sure if that was D&D or what that was, but that's definitely a thing, and that's if you want to add a component.
Yeah.
But, you know, even if you want to borrow Lovecraft, you know, the fungi from Ugoth, we think of it as, you know, kind of a winged lobster thing. But they call it, you know, the fungi because it had plant characteristics.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
So, you know, you... Now, and again, I am sort of borrowing because, you know, I tend to run horror-based games.
Sure.
But, you know, one of the most horrific things I've ever seen... did you see the movie Annihilation?
I don't believe so.
So... it's based on the Southern Reach books, and it had the Princess of Naboo,
mm-hmm.
Natalie Portman.
Okay.
And so this team goes out. Basically, this whole area of the South becomes this different dimension and becomes this Lovecraftian dimension.
Sure.
And everything goes wrong. So there's this mutant bear that attacks and kills. Spoilers.
Mm-hmm.
But they find all these plants in human form, a sort of shape, like it's kind of like topiary.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And they're saying, look at the plants, they are mutating to become human-like.
Hmm.
And spoilers, no. It's the humans. They're finding it's the remains of the humans who are turning plant-like.
Whoa.
And so that was one. And to be honest, the movie is kind of hit and miss.
Mm-hmm.
The ending was kind of, but was one of the few times I honestly felt dread in a movie theater.
Yeah.
And if you want to, if your goal is to turn, you know, to cause your players to feel dread.
Yeah.
You know, slowly changing from mammalian to plant,
mm-hmm.
you know, give you like were creatures, but instead of a werewolf or a were rat, it's plants.
Yeah. Huh. Huh. That's interesting. That's interesting. A plant that doesn't eat you, but eats your psyche, or not your psyche, but your oh man. I don't even know how to describe.
Yeah, or makes you one of them.
Yeah. No, definitely. Eats your humanity. That's what I was trying to get out there.
Exactly.
Yeah. Wow.
And you know who I would think would make this perfect villainous for a role playing game?
Who's that?
Medieval poison ivy.
Medieval poison ivy. Hmm.
Yeah, take poison ivy, but put her in a fantasy setting.
Sure.
And so poison ivy is based on, and I there's still a little bit of debate, but poison ivy is based, the character is based on a Hawthorne short story called Rappaccini's Daughter,
mm-hmm.
which is the first mad scientist story ever.
I didn't realize that.
Daniel Hawthorne wrote it.
Interesting.
Yeah, well, that's what my 11th grade teacher said, and I haven't found a real... I mean, I guess you could argue maybe Prospero and the Tempest, but so in this story, this guy basically creates his daughter out of plants.
Okay.
But she's poisonous.
Huh.
And, you know, she falls in love with this guy, so he's going to try to make him immune to the poison, but he has to turn this guy into poison. So, you know, you could do a sort of a rabbit TV's daughter, but instead of a scientist, a wizard.
Oh, yeah.
You know, and he creates this, you know, this plant creature that looks like a beautiful human being. Or, you know, even a, or you could put like a dryad.
Uh-huh, uh-huh.
You know, a dryad that's mad, or a druid that is mad at, you know, the logging that's happening in the kingdom.
Sure.
Or, you know, the campfires are burning the, so, you know, you can make a dryad or a druid. And one of the druid subclasses in 5e, and I've forgotten the name, and we'll get all this hate mail because I forgot the name.
Yeah.
I think it's the order of the circle of the spores or circle of the fungus. So that there is a fungus druid that, you know, you could make, you know, a drow druid who's going to get revenge on all of, you know, the surface dwellers for the way that they're treating nature, for, you know, building dams and things.
Hmm. Yeah. That's cool. I was thinking about a carnivorous plant that functions kind of like a pit trap. And I was thinking about the stuff that Heather was talking about, how, like, one thing that carnivorous plants generally need is, like, I don't know, a lot of water, or, you know, a fair amount of water, but terrible soil. So I was thinking, what if you had, like, some sort of magic zone where it doesn't have a lot of the nutrients that a plant needs, but it's going to cause plants to maybe mutate into ways that you wouldn't expect. And I was thinking a carnivorous plant that functioned kind of like a pit trap, kind of like spikes down at the bottom, like naturally occurring, like dungeon pit trap, but just kind of like a carnivorous plant. Then this kind of eats all of, you know, just kind of absorbs all of the, I don't know, animal bits that drip into its enzymatic, yeah. Enzymatic pool that, like, corrodes flesh at, like, I don't know, 1d6 hit points per round or whatever. Enough that you don't want to be a squirrel to fall into it, and, you know, for sure, but also enough that if your dwarf falls in there...
Or a halfling?
Yeah, yeah. If a halfling or dwarf falls in there, they're gonna be a little bit worried. Maybe it's like a 12-foot deep pit, or, you know, maybe it's a super leg breaker there. Maybe it's a, you know, super magical 20-foot deep carnivorous plant, you know, for high level characters.
Yeah.
I don't know.
And there's also, you know, I think the classic, and I don't remember, there were strangle vines. I don't remember what they're called, but
uh-huh.
Where the vines would come up and grab and just wrap around, you know, the wrist and capture, you know, players.
Sure.
And then yeah. If it's working with something like a mad druid, or even, you know, kobolds or something,
uh-huh.
You know, kobolds aren't much of a threat, but if you're tied up.
Sure, yeah.
Then they become much, much more dangerous.
Yeah. Yeah. Huh. Oh, now I'm thinking about, what if a kobold's just, like, faked carnivorous plants? What if kobolds just got a bunch of plant matter together and just, like, made people think that there was carnivorous plants, but it was just kobolds who had really good disguise skills.
Oh, that's good. It's a trap disguised as a carnivorous plant.
Yeah. Or maybe magical illusion to make you think that it's some sort of beautiful plant, but it's a magical trap.
Or what about an evil or insane trap?
What's that?
An evil or insane trend.
Oh, okay. Yeah. I was like, oh yeah, the treant is like how my D&D group pronounced it in, like, high school. So
yeah,
it's like,
that's probably,
it's like, I don't know which way.
Right then, yeah.
But yeah, no. That would be crazy too. That's, I don't know. I would not.
Because you think of them as good guys,
mm-hmm.
But what if there's a trent version of a vampire?
Ooh. Or one.
You know, You can't kill it with a stake. You got to find something else that kills it.
Or a necromancer treant that has like wood rot or Dutch elm disease. Or I don't think it would be called Dutch elm disease in D&D, but I can't think of any kingdoms off the top of my
head. Faerun elm disease.
Yeah. I was trying to think of like the super militaristic jerks in like Dragonlance, but it's been forever since I've read any of that stuff. All right, so that's plants, not necessarily carnivorous, but some ways to use some plants in your D&D, some cool adventure hooks there maybe even. So thanks everyone for listening to D&D on D&D, and here's that wonderful theme music. Dave, thank you again so much.
Thank you for having me.
Yeah, and all right, back to the show. Hey everyone, it's us. We're back. And yeah, no, thank you for listening to us. It hasn't been much Oleander in this episode, but it has been a lot of Oregon. So
yeah,
so everyone out there, we hope that you are safe and keeping clean, and wherever you're at and whatever's going on, that, you know, you're doing well and the best you can.
Yeah. And yeah, especially if you're in the southern states, you know, our heart go out for you guys, you know, with the hurricane there.
Yeah, definitely. So again, stay safe, stay clean, don't be a jerk, help those people. You know, Dave got help. Those people weren't jerks. They're being awesome. And
yeah,
you know, if we all treated each other like that, I think everything would be a lot nicer out there. But all right. Enough of us. We're just people who live in a smoke-covered state that's on fire. One of the few currently. So, you know, in case you're confused, Oregon.
But, so next week, I'm sure there's going to be more quirky, strange people from Oleander that you can listen to.
Oh, sure. Yeah. And less of us talking about the real world and more of us talking about Oleander, hopefully.
Yeah.
All right. Well, thanks again, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Bye.
This episode is finished. Rate, review, subscribe to your podcatchers. Carnivorous plants.
We had to keep everything really sealed up, but I used to smoke a pack and a half a day. So I'm like, part of me is like, this is just kind of like being in the 90s again.
That's what it reminds me of, is like the back of the throat thing. I'm like, oh God, this is like smoking unfiltered, like Pall Malls and shit.
It just reminds me of that. I've got like the kind of the cool voice happening a little bit.
Yeah. Everyone has that 90s vocal fry back.
Yeah, exactly. The real vocal fry.
Sync up the audio. So,
all right.
One, two, three, clap.